Here we go.
Welcome to Weird Stuff Happens in Canada.
My name is Emily.
I'm Brit.
This is a very soothing and well-planned-out podcast about Canadian history.
Just lie back, put your headphones in securely, and enjoy the show.
Now it's you're like a flight attendant.
Damn it, got away from me.
Very specific instructions.
Welcome to the podcast. Today, we thought we'd do a fun little topic about Canadian politics, specifically Prime Ministers of Canada. More specifically, about how Prime Ministers are people just like us.
Yeah, I feel like Canadian Prime Ministers have a reputation sort of generally as being very
boring.
Which is often true.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that just did their job.
Yeah, but
except for John Diefenbaker, who was a straight-up liar.
And I find it really interesting, you know, in our contemporary political climate, of which I know many things about, I feel like our country's image is so tied to Justin Trudeau right now.
That's very true.
In a way that I don't think it really has been in my lifetime.
Yeah, certainly when Trudeau Sr. was Prime Minister, I think it was very much the same thing. But, like, the other day I made reference to Paul Martin, and literally someone was like, who is that? And I was like, remember Prime Minister Paul Martin? And they were like,
do you think he's okay? No. Do you think he feels bad about how no one cares about him?
Like, how people literally forgot entirely about him.
I met him in Chapters one time.
Oh my gosh. Apparently, in my research for today, I found out that he is, of any prime minister ever, the wealthiest.
Whoa.
So he's fine.
Great job, Paul Martin.
Yeah, he's living his life.
So anyway, today we're going to talk about two prime ministers and
more about the personal aspect.
Yeah.
Maybe quirks of their personality. Mm-hmm.
And who knows, maybe this is the first of a series. Or maybe not.
Yeah.
You just never know.
Maybe one day we'll address the fact that John Diefenbaker is a straight-up liar.
So Britt really hates John Diefenbaker.
I actually really like him a lot. And he did a lot of really good things.
She told me.
He gave Aboriginal people the vote. Which
she,
like,
hates him so much.
That's really great. But he also lied about a lot of things. So I just am putting him on notice.
Maybe we can defunk some of his lies.
I'm not even mad about that one. It was so good.
Hey, Britt.
Yeah?
Do you want to hear a story?
I, more than anything, want to hear all about this because I saw little glimmers of it everywhere.
So, anyone who knows anything about the history of Canadian prime ministers, Prime Ministers?
Yeah, Prime Ministers.
Can probably guess that if you want to talk about sensational prime ministerial stories, you start with William Lyon Mackenzie King.
Whoa, he had four names.
He had four names. Why'd you have so many names, dude?
He was like, I can't have two? No. Two's for chumps. Three's for even bigger chumps. Four names, what is that?
So first, I just want to get to the heart of a matter of confusion. Personally, this probably, for most people, was not a thing. But for me, I always couldn't figure out the difference between William Lyon Mackenzie and William Lyon Mackenzie King.
Right.
We're going to get to the heart of it right now.
Okay, tell me.
Here we go. William Lyon Mackenzie. He lived from 1795 to 1861.
Whoa.
He was a journalist. He was a member of the Legislative Assembly. He was the first mayor of Toronto.
Oh.
And he was a really important leader in the 1837 rebellion.
Okay.
That's one guy.
Yeah.
Then William Lyon Mackenzie King was the grandson of William Lyon Mackenzie. That's why he has so many names.
He, like, threw that king on there.
So if you ever need to think about it, be like, three comes before four, so three names comes first.
Yeah.
That's for all you kids to use on your history tests.
That's actually very helpful.
If you're a kid, stop listening to this. Go read a real history book. So, William Lyon Mackenzie King.
Yeah.
Canada's longest serving prime minister.
Yeah, he was in there for a long time.
Voted by historians in Maclean's magazine as Canada's most important prime minister.
Whoa.
Also, what I'm going to talk about, Canada's strangest prime minister. So, one of the really interesting things about William Lyon Mackenzie King, who I will heretofore refer to as Willie, because that's what his friends and family called him.
Oh my god, you guys are like besties now that you've done so much research.
Yeah, me and Willie. Yeah. So, we know so much about him because he wrote in his diary nearly every day for almost 57 years.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
That's so impressive.
There's something like 30,000 pages of diary entries.
How did he find the time?
He just got into a habit. It's all about making it part of your routine.
I literally like wrote in my diary once every year the day of my birthday because that's when I would remember about it.
Yeah.
And then I would forget for an entire year.
He started when he was a teenager and he just did it his whole life.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so after he died, portions of his diary were published and a whole bunch of things came to light that nobody knew before.
Oh my god, tell me.
So,
everything.
While William Lyon Mackenzie King, Willie, was the prime minister, he was generally seen as, like, a pretty boring guy.
Okay.
He was not a good speaker. He wasn't, like, a warm person. He was generally kind of, like, mean-spirited and vindictive, and no one really liked him, but everyone agrees that he was a very good statesman.
Okay.
He made very good decisions. He led the Liberal Party through some, like, really big changes, and he generally kept the country kind of in the center, and balanced out, like, the extreme leftist or rightist views.
Okay, that's good.
But through that whole time, he was secretly such a weirdo.
Oh my god, was it, like, weird sex shit?
Well, sort of. Let's dive in. So, he was known as an eccentric.
Okay.
He never married. He did not have very many close friends. But it went way deeper than that, people found out later.
Okay.
Everyone knew that his best friends were a series of Irish setters.
Okay.
He had three of them in a row, and he named them all Pat. There was Pat, and then there was Pat 2, and then there was Pat 3.
Did he call it Pat 3?
Or just, like, Pat I don't know again? If he called it Pat 3 out loud, but, like, that's what it was.
Oh, my God.
He was obsessed with these dogs.
But, like, why couldn't you give them different names?
No, Pat 2, Pat 3. He thought that they were, like, angels from heaven.
Aww.
He loved them so much, and he would talk to them and read to them, and he interpreted great meaning in whether or not they would wag their tails when he told them stuff.
Oh my god.
So he'd be like, hey, Pat 2, I have a meeting with the governor general today. And then wait and see. I don't know if that's actually true. I made that up. But
yeah. And then Pat 2 would just sit there, and then he'd be like, gotta fire that governor general.
First of all, the prime minister cannot fire the governor general. We'll talk about that at a different time. So Willie would interpret signs from the shapes he would see in his shaving cream and his tea leaves.
Whoa, that's mystical shit.
Well, that is just the tip of the mystical iceberg.
Oh my god.
So he once, while he was staying at the Royal York Hotel, he saw two birds in his tea leaves, like one big one and one small one, and he interpreted it.
No, you said it right the first time.
As a sign of that the big bird was the Liberal Party and the small bird was the Conservative Party, and that the big bird was going to go through a hard time, but that they were going to win in the upcoming 1934 provincial election. And then they did. And he was like, see, like, I was right.
That's a bit of a reach. But also, you know who would be a big fan of Willie?
Who?
Professor Trelawney.
Oh my god. They would be best friends. And Willie loved seances! So the caveat to this is that at the time, it wasn't that weird to go to a seance.
Yeah, it was like the thing.
Yeah, it was the thing to do, but Willie really committed hard to seances.
Ooh.
He had a bunch of media, I guess is the plural of mediums.
Yeah.
In different parts of the country and in the States that he really trusted, and he would like invite them, or if he was traveling, he would go to see them. He communicated with his grandfather, the aforementioned William Lyon Mackenzie, his brother, his sister, his father, and his mother. And I think part of it is part of his fixation with speaking to people in the beyond was because he lost 4 of his close family members in 7 years.
Whoa.
So he really, and he didn't have a lot of people in his life.
Yeah.
So I think he really clung to that as a way to stay connected to these people.
Yeah.
At least that's what I think of it. And then it becomes really sad.
Yeah. You know what's more funny is like he's like sitting at breakfast and then he just hears like, Willie. Willie, look at the tea leaves, Willie. It's me, Willie Senior. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. So he would go to a medium and they would deliver a message through table rapping, which was a really popular method of communicating with the beyond at the time. It was basically like the precursor to a Ouija board.
You might say the medium was the message.
Get out.
I'll just go.
Podcast is just me now. So they would have like a big table and they would go through the alphabet.
Yeah.
And the way where the table moved or there was creaks or whatever, that would be like the beyond communicating.
Right.
Or they would do automatic writing.
Yes.
Which was just a medium going into a trance and then being like, I'm not writing. They're moving my hand, which is like the best trick.
Yeah.
Because it requires like so many of the things that they do require like sleight of hand or like, you know, elaborate setups, but you can just be like, I'm not writing. I don't know what I'm saying. Like it requires nothing. And I love that so much. It
only requires theater.
Theater. And he kept in his diary detailed accounts of all of the seances that he attended. And it was very clear from the way that he wrote about it that he 100% believed it to be real.
Whoa.
Like, there was no question for him. This was the real deal.
It kind of makes me feel sad because, like, people who really believe in that kind of stuff, like spiritualism, they just believe in it so wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
So much of it has been found to be complete and utter bullshit.
Yeah.
It's just like, don't take advantage of our prime minister.
I know. He has to literally run the country.
And, like you said, like, a lot of times people believe in it so wholeheartedly is because they're just, like, really alone or really trying to make a connection with, like, their loved ones who've passed away, so...
Yeah, it's really sad. So Willie would, of course, always consult his dead relatives on government decisions.
Oh, God!
He said he did, he was, I don't know whether he wrote this or said it at some point, but he would be like, I would ask their opinion, but I would always trust my own opinion.
Okay, good. I was like, man, our country was founded on ghost suggestions?
Basically.
Which I love, actually.
He also would talk to famous people to get their advice.
Like who?
Like, he really liked to talk to FDR.
Oh, okay.
He would talk to Leonardo da Vinci.
Okay.
And then he would consult Wilfrid Laurier, because, like, he knew about running Canada.
Well, and they lived in the same house, right?
Yeah.
So
he was... probably there.
Yeah.
And of course, he would talk to the dead Pats about important issues.
Yeah. He was like, Pat 2, are you shaking your tail?
Yeah. And Pat 3 was like, what about me? I'm alive. Can I have food? I'm sure he fed them. So he generally just like thought coincidences were really meaningful. And like, if he would meet someone on the street, like it would be for a specific reason. And he just found meaning in everything. If something important happened, he would immediately look at his watch to see the exact numbers, because he was one of those people who read a lot of importance into specific numbers, specifically the numbers 7 and 17.
Ooh.
And he kept... What? Oh, I see what I'm saying. He kept most of his eccentricities as just a secret for his whole life. So people were always like, yeah, he's kind of weird, but nobody knew like the depths of the weird stuff that he was doing until he died. And then we got his diaries. There was also And so that's kind of like the general, like, cute stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's stuff that people don't talk about as much.
Oh, no.
That I don't, there's not a lot of detail about it. I mean, I'm sure there is if you, like, actually read biographies, of which there are many,
mm-hmm.
And don't just read some articles on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But it was pretty well known that he was obsessed with his mother.
Oh.
And, like, people have pointed to, like, an Oedipal complex.
Oh.
That he, like, when his mother, it was her 74th birthday, he, like, very specifically wrote in his diary about how he went and gave her 74 kisses.
Oh, no.
And his, I don't know if it was one specific dog, Pat, or all of his dogs, Pat.
Yeah.
He saw them as kind of, like, the spirit of his mother.
Oh.
And that their licks or her licks.
Oh.
So, like, weird shit happening there.
Oh, that's a bit strange.
And he was he was known to frequently visit sex workers.
Okay.
While he was prime minister.
Whoa, did not know that.
He would write in his diary about how he was trying to save, quote unquote, save them, but that it was a waste of time and money. But then, like, people, even though he was only writing for himself, people still think that he wrote that to, like, cover his ass, that he just, like, wanted to go have sex with a sex worker and pay them for it.
Oh.
So obviously had some, like, weird sex shit. He was, like, very sexually repressed.
Yeah.
Never married. He wanted to find, like, he wanted to find a wife.
Yeah.
But he had this, like, perfect ideal because he was so obsessed with his mother,
right,
that he could not fulfill.
Right.
Because no one was as good as his mom, Isabel. And so he's generally seen now as, like, a typical repressed, passive, aggressive, privileged white male. And that he had all of the hang-ups that you see with that specific life.
Yeah.
And because he was born into money, and he was just kind of, like, he just went through life. It's just, I do kind of find it fundamentally sad because he really went through life, like, completely alone.
Yeah. And, like, you know, like, all those things, like, there's, for me, it's like foibles in a person of great power, when it's like sex, I'm like, it's like it's just too bad that he was so repressed and obviously, like, had some, like, issues of, like separation anxiety with, like, his mother and, like,
yeah,
like, all of that can be seen as, like, innocent or as, like, perverse as you want to see it.
Mm-hmm. And who knows the specifics of,
yeah,
of that kind of stuff.
And, like, yeah. It's just, like, I did not know that stuff about, like, going to see a sex worker is whatever. But, yeah, like, when you're Prime Minister of Canada, I'm just surprised none of that came out.
Yeah, until so much later.
Yeah.
But it's crazy to think about that he was prime minister from 1921 to 1930 and then from 1935 to 1948. So, yeah, for almost 22 years he was prime minister, which is way longer than anyone else before or since. And he has really quite a great legacy. Generally, he's thought of, as I said, as, like, a prime minister who really unified the country.
Mm-hmm.
He led the country through World War II. World War I politically had been so divisive because of conscription and,
right,
all the stuff with immigration and racism and that kind of stuff. And he really, like, stayed away from those issues and focused on unifying everyone.
Yeah.
He mobilized huge amounts of Canadian money, supplies, and volunteers to support Britain, but he was the one who insisted that Canadians not, they fought under the Canadian flag when they went to the war instead of fighting for Britain. Like, we were on the British side, but he insisted that they fight for Canada. And he really maintained a Canadian identity, and he boosted the home front morale. That was, like, really a huge thing for him because he had seen it be bad during, yeah, the First World War. He brought Canada out of the Depression,
wow,
which is, like, no small feat.
Yeah.
He lost the election in 1930 to R.B. Bennett, basically because there was the stock market crash in 1929, and he was like, nah, this is fine, it'll pass.
Ooh.
But your mediums didn't tell you that.
Yeah.
And so then Bennett, he did, there was huge unemployment, especially in the West, and he did literally nothing about it. Mm. And so then Bennett came in and was like, I can fix it. And so then the liberals lost in 1930, but Bennett did not do such a good job, yeah. which we can talk about at a future date. And so the liberals, led by Willie, won huge in 1935. They won by a huge majority because people were like, oh, Willie, come back.
Well, just kidding. We, when we said we wanted to break up, we were just kidding about that.
Yeah. And then in 1935, the King government passed the Reciprocal Trade Agreement with the United States, which really increased trade and was a huge boost to the economy.
Yeah.
And it really strengthened the Canadian-American relationship. And one of his biggest legacies is laying the foundation of Canada's current social welfare system.
Oh, wow.
So he really started, like, he passed the Unemployment Insurance Act in 1940, which gave insurance to the unemployed. He passed the National Housing Act in 1944, which made mortgages more affordable. Like, he was really committed to social welfare, and you know, one of his mottos was help those who cannot help themselves.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's so hard to reconcile. Like, he was generally just not, he wasn't charismatic, and especially yeah. at a time when the other world leaders were Churchill
yeah.
and Roosevelt, like these yeah. guys who were so charismatic and had such huge presences.
Yeah.
And yeah. like,
and he was just like, doop-a-doop.
And he was like, well, I'm here and I'm doing policies and no one cares about that. Okay. Yeah. Going to see a medium and then stopping off to pay for sex later.
Yeah. It's just crazy. It's like, he was like a lot more wild than we thought. Or
yeah.
knew. But also it's like, shouldn't that be like what being the leader of a country is like, like, I guess you need to inspire confidence mm-hmm. and inspire, like morale in your people. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, it's the policies that matter.
Yeah, you and put your head down and you do your work.
Did he have a perfect track record? No. There's, like, a very well-documented that he had a really great relationship with Hitler. Like, much before the war,
yeah.
Hitler and he met, and he was like, this guy's the shit.
Yeah.
He was like, Hitler is a patriot. He obviously loves his people. Like, he really admired him. So obviously, you know, Leonardo da Vinci should have told him that Hitler was not going to turn out so good.
Leonardo da Vinci was like, don't do it. Oh no, he's Italian. Really? Don't do it. He's not a nice man.
Yeah, he should have.
Yeah.
So that's on you, Leo.
Yep. Thanks, Leonardo da Vinci. I, like, literally had to stop myself from saying DiCaprio. Anyways, moving on.
So,
well done.
That is the story of William Lyon Mackenzie King, and it's much more complicated than that, and there are several very lengthy biographies if you are interested in reading more. And you can also just legit read his actual diaries, which I'm sure are very boring.
Yeah, probably still boring, but, like, if you just skip through to, like, the good stuff, you're like, whoa!
Yeah.
All, like, the ghost stuff and the sex stuff. And you can also go to his house in Ottawa, and he decorated it very beautifully.
And there's a crystal ball there.
Yeah, see, now I wish I had known all this stuff before going to the house, because yeah. then I would have, like, looked for all his, like, weird seance shit.
Yeah, it's all there. There's yeah. literally a crystal ball that they were like, oh, yeah, this was his crystal ball. Next thing. And you're like, wait, what?
And there's also a man there, like, pretending to be him.
Yeah,
and I would have been like, excuse me, sir.
Excuse me, sir.
Can you tell me more about all the weird ghost shit you're into?
Do you see a ghost right now?
Yeah.
Where's Pat? Is Pat here? Pat 2? Is it Pat 2 or Pat 3?
And then he would have just been like, welcome to my home.
Yeah. And it's like, he would have gotten, like, so close to you and been like, listen, can you not?
Yeah.
I'm trying to do my job and you're making it really difficult for me.
I've been here for 9 hours. So speaking of the complicated and foible-filled secret, slightly not so secret life of our great leaders, I'm going to bring us back pre-Confederation
Ooh.
To talk about our first
Prime Minister. Yes. John A. Macdonald.
Everybody loves John A. Macdonald. Everybody loves him. Everybody loves him.
Everybody does love him. But we can talk about why that's problematic.
Great.
But I've titled this for now, Johnny Macdonald, First Prime Minister, Sass Master, Noted Alcoholic.
Yay!
So, in the early 19th century, everybody was drunk all the time.
Sure. Well, it was medicine.
Yeah. Excuse me, madam.
Our cat is going to knock over the microphone.
Sally, move.
Go away. Yeah, there you go.
So basically everyone was poor, whiskey was cheap, taverns were everywhere, cats were crawling all over people. So everyone was just drunk all the time. People drank while they were on the job, soldiers drank to like pass the time while they were fortified. Like out in the wilderness. And it was noted by a historian that even more than Americans, Canadians drank all the time.
Yay!
During this time in politics, alcohol was very important because a lot of meetings took place in saloons. It was used to kind of like grease the wheels a little bit. And a lot of times even like voting took place in saloons. So it right. just like kind of went hand in hand with like politics at the
yeah.
time. So, it was no surprise that even in the federal government, alcohol was used a lot. A great example of that was in the lead up to Confederation, there was like a lot of ill will between, the maritime provinces and what was then known as Canada, which was Ontario and Quebec. Ontario and Quebec pretty much didn't care about the Maritimes. The Maritimes thought that Ontario and Quebec, like, literally could not get their shit together.
Right. So, which, I mean, they couldn't, to yeah, be fair.
They're not wrong. So Johnny Macdonald and, like, his people, like, planned this, like, tour, out through the Maritimes to Charlottetown, and they were gonna, like, have this Charlottetown meeting, and they were gonna come to some kind of agreement on, like, how to get together, because Johnny Macdonald's main thing was, like, I wanna bring us all together. Yeah. Unification.
And this was before Confederation.
Yeah. So this is like 1864, I think. So yeah. Just a couple years before.
Sure.
That. Yeah. So this was like, it's like a very famous trip where they went out and essentially spent like on champagne alone, $13,000.
Like $13,000 of 1864 money?
Yeah.
That's like $1.5 million.
I know.
And I did the conversion in my head just real quick.
That was amazing.
Thank you.
So they, like, every time they had talks, they would have, like, champagne lunches and champagne dinners and champagne breakfasts. And they would go out on the, like, boating trips and just get drunk and, like, and they were like these, there was a historian who was saying that like it, because of the champagne, like the champagne was like a useful tool, but also essential mm-hmm. in like unifying these two groups of people because it just kind of created a camaraderie between yeah. them. So basically our country was founded on
champagne
and people
were floating in champagne.
Ooh. It was well known at the time that the prime minister...
Stop saying president.
Sorry. It's because you've been watching so much Scandal. The prime
minister...
Oh, yeah.
Blame it on me. Blame it on Kerry Washington. Blame it on Fitz, who I don't know his real name.
So it was well known that Johnny Macdonald was a drinker. But even by the standards of the time, he was known to be a heavy drinker.
Oh,
so
no.
In a time when everybody was drunk, he was the
most drunk.
So he would get really belligerent at dinner parties. He would pass out at the governor general's house.
Oh, no.
He would show up like completely wasted at parliament meetings. And they were saying that like
in what he drank so much that it would have like destroyed lesser men. So just kind of shows like how great of a statesman
he was. So good that he could, his superpower was drinking more.
Yeah. And like in the Charlottetown Accords, there's a famous photo at the end they took of everyone that was there. And John McDonald's the only one that's sitting. And apparently it's because he was so hungover, he literally could not stand up.
No.
So he was, they were like, put him in a chair.
Johnny.
I know. And so sometimes his drinking was fine. Mm-hmm. Other times when there was the Fenian raid in 1866, which was like Irish, I don't know if you know what the Fenians.
Yeah, nationalists. Yeah,
nationalists. They like invaded Canada. They were going to like annex part of Canada, mm-hmm, and like give it back to Queen Victoria. When they raided, they like came in and they were like, Johnny McDonald, like there's people like attacking us. And he was like so drunk, he literally could not like speak to people.
Oh,
he was
no.
like, I can't read this. What does this say? So they had to like wait for him to sober up before they could do anything.
Mm.
So he had a problem.
Definitely.
It was something that he acknowledged and, in fact, celebrated. He was known at one point to, he got in a fight with Cabinet Minister George Brown, who he had, like, an infamous, like, rivalry with.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, like, really drunk, and, like, George Brown was, like, he, like, they got in a big fight in the middle of the House of Commons. George Brown was, like, you're drunk, you're a drunk. And he was, like, yes. But the people prefer John A. drunk to George Brown sober.
Whoa.
Whoa.
What a burn.
And then at another time, he had, there was another statesman that, Thomas D'Arcy McGee, who was like a very famous father, mm-hmm, of Confederation. And they were like confronted by their caucus for both of them being like raging alcoholics.
Oh my God.
And Johnny McDonald was like, look here, McGee, this government can't afford two drunkards. And you've got to stop.
Because I certainly won't.
But his, like, most famous incident of public intoxication was when he was he was campaigning across Ontario, and he was at a campaign debate in Northern Ontario. And when he got up onto the podium, his debate partner, who literally no one even remembers what this guy's name is, was doing his speech, and John McDonald's so drunk he just like puked all over the podium.
Oh no.
And everyone was like, ugh. And like all of the people that were with John A were like, oh God, oh
yeah.
God. And then he just like stood up and like looked at his opponent and he said, Mr. Chairman and gentlemen, I don't know how it is, but every time I hear my opponent speak, it turns my stomach. And the
honestly,
whole crowd just, like, burst into laughter.
Like, alcoholism, a very serious problem, but that is such a baller move.
I know. And he was, like, very famous for having, like, a very sharp, quick wit.
Yeah.
That, like, he just would, like, it, on a dime, like, turn things. And it was really helpful to him in being a statesman because it really kind of, it allowed him to say no to people in a way that like it was kind of eased,
mm-hmm,
it. It wasn't, it didn't turn people against him.
Well, and he was like infamously incredibly intelligent,
yeah,
right? Like he became a lawyer when he was like 17 or
yeah,
something like that. And
yeah,
then he was just like, I'm a teenage lawyer.
Yeah.
We should make a TV show about like teenage lawyer, like Doogie Howser, but it's about John A. McDonald.
Teenage lawyer of the 1700s.
The
1800s. I'm trying to think, was he 17 in the 1700s? Anyways.
No.
Moving on.
He was not.
Moving on, I can't do math. many times his quick wit saved him, but there was one incident where not even his wit could save him.
Oh, no.
And he, in fact, nearly almost lost his life.
Whoa.
Due to his drinking.
Tell us everything.
So he went to London in 1866. This was after the Charlottetown meeting. There was another meeting in Quebec City. They're planning Confederation. They finally got together. They made their thing called the 72 Resolutions. And then they were like, we're here. We're together. We just got to go to England and be like, make us a country.
Dear, who is the monarch?
It would have been Queen Victoria.
Victoria. We want independence. Can we have it, please?
Yeah. And so they were in London for the London Conference. The Maritime guys arrived in July. The rest of the delegation couldn't make it there because John McDonald was so drunk.
Oh, no.
They didn't get there till November.
At this time... Like, I know that travel was hard in the 1800s, but he was so drunk that he delayed them... August, September, October... 4 months?
Yeah. And the, like, Maritime guys are just, like, chilling in London, like, okay, let's become a country.
Oh, my God.
And they were saying at this time his alcoholism was worse than it had ever been. There was times where he had to, like, just, like, lean on his desk and, like, hold on tightly to, like, just remain standing while he was speaking in the house. So, and this... Not a coincidence. This was around the same time, or not around the same time, but his wife Isabella had died a couple years earlier.
Yeah.
And Johnny McDonald suffered a lot of like hardships when it came to his personal life as well. So finally they get there. They all like meet and they drink or whatever. It's one of the nights of the delegation committee meetings. And so they go upstairs, and because Johnny was single man at the time, he went to bed by himself. He got into bed. He, like, put on his old-time pajamas.
Sure.
Got into bed, was, like, reading the newspaper, was, like, pretty intoxicated, and woke up a couple hours later to a severe feeling of pain on his face and chest.
Oh, no.
And it turned out that he had fallen asleep with the candle still lit. The candle had fell over, had lit his entire bed on fire, all the curtains of, like, the bed chamber. Like, imagine, like, Scrooge
in his
bed
chamber. Oh, my God, and everything's on fire.
And his body was burning. And so he leapt up, and he was, like, putting out the fire, and then from the adjacent room, Sir Georges Etienne Cartier was sleeping, and, like, they had been, like, rivals for a long time, but Cartier was, like, really important in bringing Quebec into
the plan. Yeah, it's, like, the reason that Quebec was able to become part of Canada.
So, like, these two men are in their pajamas putting out a fire in, like, a hotel in London, and, like, they managed to, like, put it out, and, like, all the... like, the fire is, like, smothered. And it's only then that he realized how badly he was injured.
Oh, my God.
So, like, his hair and hands and forehead were all burned. And there was... But the worst spot was, like, he had a really intense wound on his shoulder. And if it wasn't for, like, his old-timey pajamas, like, he probably would have died.
His old-timey pajamas saved his life?
Yeah, because they were so thick that it, like, took a long time for the flannel to burn through.
Oh, my God.
I know. Thank God for flannel.
Thank God for flannel.
Yeah. And like, he admitted, like, I would have been burned to death in, like, a quote. But because, like, this is what happens often with burns, like, he suffered a really severe infection. So he, like, almost died from the infection, and he spent like, eight straight days in bed. This is all while they're trying to, like, establish Canada as a country. But he did survive, and months later the delegates bill was passed by British Parliament. It was called the British North American Act, and it came into effect July 1st 1867.
Hooray!
The Dominion of Canada was officially born.
Pew pew.
So it
those
was,
are fireworks.
Pew pew pew. So, it was this trip to London that changed many things. One, Confederation happened.
Great.
Two, he almost died in a fire.
Not
which
great.
Kind of, like, gave him a wake-up call.
Right.
Three, he met Susan Agnes Bernard, who would become his second wife.
Ho, ho, ho.
I know.
Romance in Europe.
And she was really instrumental in trying to curb his alcoholism.
Right.
She didn't succeed. He would remain an alcoholic till his death. But they say now that she added probably 20 extra years onto his life.
Whoa.
She significantly lessened his drinking.
Susan.
So he would still go on benders from time to time, but she really enabled him to function more in day-to-day life. And so, consequently, you know, we had 20 more years with Johnny McDonald as Prime Minister of Canada in a time when Canada was very fragilely, like, becoming a country.
Yeah.
So, for better or worse, like, you know, Susan was instrumental in that happening.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the long and short history of Johnny McDonald's alcoholism and how it contributed to Canada becoming a country, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And, like, Johnny McDonald is really interesting because, as we said, he's very smart. He's very charming. He did a lot of things that enabled Canada to become a country. He really pulled everyone together. He, like, created the foundation for what Canada was going to become. Mm-hmm. But also, he did a lot of fucked up things. He sided with the Southern Confederate States during the Civil War because he believed that slavery, he was pro-slavery.
Mm-hmm.
He also believed in eugenics, in that, like, the white race should remain pure.
Yeah.
He believed that Canada should become an Aryan nation. Weirdly believed that Chinese people were an entirely separate, distinct race from white people.
Sure.
So, like, a lot of problematic things about Johnny McDonald. So, like, when people, like, really, you know, there was, like, John A. Day a couple years ago, because it was the 200 years since his birth,
yeah.
I think. So, you know, a lot of people were celebrating him, but a lot of other people were like, we tend to gloss over some of that stuff. So that's why I found it a bit problematic when I was going to talk about, because, like, the stories about, like, his drinking, while, you know, keeping in mind that it's, like, was a problem, but it was also born out of a time where a lot of people were drinking.
Yeah. And, like, would, it's weird to say, but would he have been the leader that we had if he had been a sober dude?
Yeah. Yeah, like, who's to say? Like, he was who he was, and he managed to do all of this while being heavily intoxicated through most of it. But being heavily intoxicated kind of went hand in hand with being a politician at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting because they were talking about his doctor was a famous teetotaler and was also the first person to allow women to practice medicine.
Oh, wow.
So, like, I kind of want to, like, research that guy a bit more because it's, like, it's interesting that, like, that's his contemporary, a man who never drank
but,
and also made huge, like, leaps in terms of, like, allowing for more space for more people.
And so, I just think there's such a tendency, I don't know whether it's just, you know, our generation or if this is kind of more lasting, but I feel like there's a tendency to view these old-timey Canadian guys as just kind of silly and innocuous.
Yeah.
When I think things were, much more dynamic and just much more, like, his life in a lot of ways was incredibly tragic, like, to live for a very, very long time with such a serious addiction.
Yeah.
It's not cute.
Yeah. And that's why I kind of struggled with this story was because I was like, you know, those moments of, like, witticism are so brilliant and so funny that, you know, and that's the story I always heard was, like, him throwing up.
Me too.
But at the same time, it was, like, a very serious addiction, and he was a very complicated man.
Yeah.
That had complicated ideals, but, like, that one of the articles I read, for better or worse, he was the person that founded Canada as we know it.
Yeah.
You know, as a confederation of places. And, like, honestly, like, one of the things I read, and please, anyone, feel free to reach out and tell me that this is not true, but that the reason that he called Canada a the Confederation was because of the, like, Confederate army of, like,
whoa,
like, that's why, it's because he, like, so strongly sided with the Confederation of Southern States.
Really?
So then, like, that's, like, you know, we have to embrace that and acknowledge it as part of our history.
Yeah, and I think it's so important to really really think about how complicated all of these figures are, as we should with, I think, all historical figures, because, you know, no one is wholly good and no one is wholly evil, and that it's part of the larger conversation that I think is so important to be having right now of, like, the legacy that people are leaving behind and how, you know, you can't just forget the bad things that people did because they also did good things.
Yeah, and also you can't just focus on the incredibly bad things people did. Well, some people you can. I just was like, well, I take that back completely.
Yeah.
Some people do things so horrible that it eradicates any good
Definitely.
Thing ever done.
Yeah.
But, yeah, with some people you have to take the good with the bad. And I think with Canada, we tend to only take the good.
Yeah.
And I think it's, something that, like, I think that we should be talking about more.
Definitely.
Anyways, let me get off my high horse and back onto this couch. If you like what you hear, leave us a review on iTunes.
You should like and subscribe. And we would like to do a very special shout out.
Yes.
To someone who is part of the Weird Stuff Happens in Canada family.
Yeah, he is your friend and mine. He's a meat man. He's a tall guy.
You may have noticed that all of our episodes have beautiful episode art, and they're all created by Ryan Bannon, and we love him so much, and we hope that he continues to help us forever and doesn't get sick of our bullshit.
Yeah, and I hope that he's actually listening to this point in the episode. Maybe we should have put this at the beginning, but...
We'll cut and paste.
Ryan, we love you.
Yeah. And if you have any comments or want to tell us what a great job we're doing, send us an email.
Weirdstuffcanada@gmail.com. Bye.
Bye.